2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
And I'm Taco, so welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Drop and give me 20 lineup soldiers. It is time for another PGA podcast, and I'm pretty frustrated this week, not gonna lie. This is a pretty shitty week, because yet again, DraftKings has refused to tighten up the prices at all. I thought last week was an anomaly, like they just made the most ridiculous pricing last week, and even the week before that, but it's just, this is going to be a common thing with them, I guess. Just absolutely terrible pricing. I hate it. I can't stand it. Probably not even going to play that much this week myself, but probably still play a little bit, but I'm just really upset about all this. Definitely scaling back what I'd usually play, because in a super soft pricing week like this, it just caters to all the newbies that are still pouring in from the end of the NFL season, and you know, it makes sense, but just very frustrating to see. It takes all of the skill out of it, really, all the advanced, you know, the advanced work that you put into, you know, scouring over stats and stuff, just thrown out the window when the plays are handed to you on a silver platter with all of these just absolutely ridiculously priced players. So I'm gonna keep it a little bit short this week because I'm not, you know, too into this week, but I do have an important announcement to make first. So I'm going to keep it a little bit shorter this week, but I would like to point out first that the projection system that I was working on last week and showed a few of you guys in the Slack chat, it's going really well. We're going to add the projections to the main cheat sheet this week, and within the next few weeks, we're going to be adding PGA to the domination station, so you guys can mass multi-enter with ease. And if you would like access to the domination station and the VIP cheat sheets that are just an amazing resource, it's got projections, odds, course history, recent form, the field adjusted statistics, which are absolutely phenomenal, everything that, you know, I talk about here in the podcast, you can get access to it. Go to dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO for 20% off discount for life. $16 a month for coaching from, you know, experts in every single DFS sport. Full coverage of every sport. You can see all of the cheat sheets, get all of our expert picks. I've got a really nice sheet that I put up every day on NBA. That's a simulation model that's been doing pretty well so far. And obviously the Domination Station, which has also been killing it. And of course, with PGA coming in soon, you'll definitely want to get into that. So check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Let's get into the breakdown here. This is Riviera Country Club, and this tournament is known as the Genesis Open now. Used to be the Northern Trust Open, and before that, the Los Angeles Open. This is a really nice course, kind of wide open, not too much trouble to get into. I mean, of course you have your sand around the green, but really not much compared to, you know, your average course. Pretty easy, kind of a bomber's course, but the main angle here is that there are only three par fives and only three par threes, and everything else is par four city. Most notably, half of the holes on this course are par fours from the 450 to 500 yard rank, so you'll definitely want to take a look at the efficiency scoring sheet that I've put on the cheat sheet. It shows you who all's best at that key range, because that's half of the entire course here. Now, if you don't know what the efficiency scoring projections are, basically take every single hole, every par, and the distance of the holes, and I use their scoring averages on those, you know, types of holes, and I add them up together to come up with an overall projection for how they're going to score on the course. You know, it's really nice to get back to just one course. I can start doing this stuff again. Plus, we've got more data pouring in every week, so starting to be able to deal with a lot of this 2017 data, finally. So Riviera Country Club, it's a par 71, kind of long for a par 71, 7,300 yards. And people score right around 71 strokes on average, so it's a par course. The greens are Poa Anua. The size of the greens are 5,000 yards squared, so, or 5,000 feet squared, so a little bit smaller than normal. You're definitely going to want a lot of ball striking, approach the green, those sort of stats, and with all the par fours, that just makes sense. The stimp meter is only a 12 at this course, so the greens are a little bit softer than usual, so I don't think it'll matter a whole lot. The driving accuracy last year is only 54%, which is under average, and the width of the fairways are a little bit narrower than usual. So I don't know if that really means you gotta look at driving accuracy too much, because you still need distance with it being a longer par 71. But really, just good off the tee stats will probably be pretty important here. Really focusing on these short par 4 scores, that's where we're going to get a lot of value out of the guys on the slate. And really, you don't have to think too much about like course fit or these stats, really. Because, like I said, with the super soft pricing, a lot of these plays are just going to be made for you by DraftKings not knowing how to price people properly. So let's just get into that. And before I really get into the picks here, I would like to point out that there's one person in particular that I'm looking at a lot. And when I think about this tournament, I only think about, really, this guy. And this should actually make for one of the more interesting case studies I think I've ever come across in DFS PGA. That guy would be KJ Choi. Okay, so KJ Choi, if you think about course horses, guys with good course history at a certain course, like Steve Stricker at Deer Run, something like that, or Jordan Spieth at the Masters, as that's gone over the years. If you look at KJ Choi at this course, he has not only made the cut 16 straight years, he's finished in the top 33 16 straight years. Like, his course history here is probably the best of anybody's course history everywhere, outside of not really winning the thing. But he is just an absolute lock year to year to come in the top 30. However, he has missed his last six cuts. He doesn't really look like a PGA Tour professional anymore. He looks like he's fighting for his card. He's an old man. Obviously, he's been on tour for about 20 years. So this makes for a really interesting situation where it's like, do you keep playing him all in like I have the past several years? He finished fifth place last year, and I had him on every single lineup, and that was absolutely magnificent for me, but it's like, his form is just so insanely bad right now. Does that override everything about his course history here, or will he kind of come into this very familiar course, one that he's always just been fantastic at, and just continue doing that? It's a real good case study, just for the overall effect of how much course history really matters compared to recent form. Sort of like Hideki Matsuyama back in the, which one? Well, it's the opposite of like Hideki Matsuyama back at the Sony Open, where he had great form and terrible course history. This is the opposite. Now, KJ Choi is at the absolute rock-bottom price. It does make sense, although it shows that they really aren't factoring in course history that much, and you might notice that with some of the other plays, but let's just go to the top here. Jordan Spieth obviously won last week. His course history is kind of up and down. He missed the cut last year. Then 4th in 2015, 12th in 2014, then missed the cut way back when he was, young, scrapping young lad, or I think it's strapping young lad, but whatever. Back in 2012, he missed the cut. Don't think that matters. He's probably a little too expensive this week, finally. And I haven't said that recently about the studs, but, you know, $12,600 at only 9-to-1 odds to win. Yeah, that's kind of pushing it, you know. It's going to be really hard for him to make value unless he wins again. But his form is kind of, you know, just ridiculous. But he's right there, you know, $1,100 more expensive than Hideki Matsuyama. Look at Matsuyama. He's never missed the cut here. Finished top 25 all 3 years. Obviously won last time out at Waste Management. Has all those wins from the swing season. His form's crazy. Really everything about his tee to green game is crazy. So he probably makes for a better play for sure. And I think ownership will kind of reflect that. But as far as the studs go, I'm most interested in Dustin Johnson. If you look back at the last 10 years, he has missed two cuts. But outside of that, he's finished top four every single year. In 2009, he did finish 10th. But the last 3 years, finished top four, missed the cut in 2013, finished fourth, missed the cut, finished third in 2010. So his course history is pretty magnificent outside of a few just random missed cuts. But if you look at statistically, he's a super bomber with some accuracy for a bomber, you know. Gains strokes everywhere, putts pretty damn well. He's probably going to be the chalk, you know. He made up for his miscut at the Farmers with a T3 last week at Pebble Beach. This is looking like the kind of course I'll set up for him very well. He's on top of the efficiency scoring projections and actually is the best in the field at the key range this week. Par 4 is 400 to 450 yards. So far he's averaging 3.7 strokes. It would be 0.06 strokes better than Spieth. So he's obviously going to be, I don't know if he'll be the chalk exactly, but I think he should be. Maybe people gravitate a little more to the likes of the guys, you know, underneath him that are priced just absurd. Maybe someone like, you know, well, we'll get into the guys later that'll super, super chalky coming up here. But out of these studs, these $11,000 plus studs, I think DJ is the way to go. And I think he's going to be the highest owned. And, you know, it just makes so much sense looking at him and how he's done here in the past and just really everything about his game. He's DJ. He's awesome. Play him. Going down to 10,300, you have the return of Adam Scott. He hasn't played in a while. I think the last time he played was back in November. But he had that just insane run during the FedEx Cup. Even the few events he did in the swing season, like the CIMB and his, you know, not the Australian Open, but the World Cup of Golf there in Australia did really well. You know, everything about Adam Scott is awesome. He's gotten over his terrible putting, and he's now just kind of a sort of crappy putter, which is great because everything else tee to green is just perfect about him. He's really elite, didn't miss a cut last year at all. So I think Scott's going to be chalky, probably like DJ chalky, if not a little more chalky than that. Even though nothing comes up on the game logs with him, I think most PGA players from last year will remember, hey, Adam Scott's the guy. You know, didn't miss a cut last year. Probably the way to go. And I kind of agree with that. Right underneath him at 10,000, we have Jason Day. It's getting a little egregious, you know, seeing Jason Day as the fifth most expensive guy instead of like the first or second. But he did have some initial struggles, you know, missed the cut at the Farmers. But, you know, last week posted a T5 at the Pebble Beach. Hasn't really played this course much at all, and the three times he did play back from 2010 2012 he was crap, missing two cuts and posting a T62 finish. Oh boy. But you know, his odds are significantly better than Scott's. He's the world's number one ranked golfer. Unfortunately, he's probably the world's number one most inaccurate driver of the ball, but I think the way that, you know, his game goes is he misses the fairway, and everyone here is going to be missing the fairway, but he's just so great out of the rough. Awesome scrambler. Best scrambler, even better than Spieth and Matsuyama up here. The best scrambler of all the studs. Really has an awesome tee to green game. Outside of his approach game, that's the only thing that really worries me, you know, a little bit with him. But I think you're getting a really good price on him. But, you know, then again, this week is really not about price because the pricing is just messed up on all aspects of the game. Next, you got Justin Thomas at 9,600. Obviously, had those two wins. And at those courses, the wins really came from his ability to just destroy these par fours. He's up there on the key range of par fours, and really any sort of par four he was just destroying so far this season. Actually, his biggest struggle, surprise, has been his long par five scoring, which is a little bit strange for him. Usually I think of him as a par five scorer, but hey, this is a par four course, so I'm personally all over Justin Thomas. I don't think he'll be very popular missing the cut at the Waste Management, although he kind of should be with his, you know, recent wins and stuff. Course history is just kind of eh, made the cut twice, did nothing with those made cuts, but, you know, look at his game. Right now, he's great with his approach game. You know, driving accuracy to be desired, but, you know, like I said with Day, everyone's going to be missing the fairway here. Drives the ball a mile. And it's pretty good at everything else. His putter's been there. I think that's what led to his victories. Just fantastic putting, but or maybe even a lot of that was, you know, him hitting it 2 feet to the hole every time. So if he can keep doing that, I expect another really good performance out of him. And since the week is how it is with a lot of chalky people out there, I think ownership's the name of the game. So I'm pivoting to Justin Thomas. So you can tail me if you want, but, you know, if he sucks, he sucks. I'm not too worried about it, though. I think he'll be all right. I think everyone's going to play Sergio Garcia at 9,300. Course history is awesome outside of a miscut last week. You know, we haven't seen Sergio, but he's played overseas a bit. People just love playing Sergio. Like, he's a name everyone knows. I feel like at his yearly stats, he's freaking awesome at everything. And he kind of is. Looking at the recent field-adjusted statistics, I only have two instances from him, so the sample size is a little low going back to last June, but he's driving the ball with a lot of accuracy, just good total driving. The worrisome point, obviously, is his atrocious putting, so that may warrant a fade, but these greens aren't the worst. You know, he hits a billion greens in regulation, that's like his game right there, and, you know, once you get it on, you know, maybe the softer greens will help him mitigate his shit putting. So that'd be the angle on him. But really, Sergio is just someone that doesn't miss the cut, like, ever. And, you know, he's not going to win, but he'll post, like, a top 5, top 10 finish, and no one will be surprised. So makes for a good play, especially at 9,300. He's a real stud. And after him, the price kind of drops down a bit to Patrick Reed at 8,800. You know, I think they should just price up this range of people up to like 9,000, and maybe this would be an okay slate, but, you know, the pricing drop off is just nuts here. Patrick Reed at 8,800, he's not really gonna miss the cut either. His scrambling game's off the charts. Can't really drive that well, but I'm not too worried about that here. Hits a lot of birdies, you know, just kind of does everything well. He's only played here once in 2013, and he missed the cut, so maybe it's something to worry about. But the reason not to play him, I guess, is just because you look at the odds drop off from Sergio to Patrick Reed. Sergio's at 24-1. Patrick Reed's at 42-1. Just a giant jump. And you've got guys that are significantly better than him underneath. And just because of the pricing, I don't think Reed's going to be all that popular of a play. But, you know, maybe makes for a sneaky pivot of sorts. Although, people like Patrick Reed. I think they'll still play him a lot. So I don't really know what to do with him. I do like Paul Casey underneath him. Paul Casey obviously had that amazing fall season. Missed the cut coming back off a short break at the Sony, but and then came back into form at the Career Builder and the Farmers Open. His course history is awesome. He finished second in 2015. Played here 3 times, all pretty good made cuts. And I think he's going to be overlooked just because of the guy underneath him. And that would be one of the most ridiculous errors on the entire slate here. At least as far as anyone like 7,000 up goes. Justin Rose, 8,400. What? It's just dumb. 8,400. He's going to be chalk again. He was 40% owned last week in pretty much every tournament. It looked like he was going to do poorly, but kind of made up for that. And looked like he was going to post a top 20 finish until he fizzled a little bit on Sunday. But, you know, he's made three cuts in a row. Fourth at the Farmers, second at Shriners. But the Sony Open. So he's going to be super popular. He was super popular last week. And, you know, people got decent performance out of him. Course history here is perfect. 5 for 5, 3 top 16 finishes. His odds to win are 20 better than Casey, who's more expensive than him. He just sticks out like a sore thumb. Both him and the guy 100 below him are going to be insanely popular. Not really much to say here, because it doesn't really matter if he fits the course or not. He's Justin Rose. He's a stud. He's underpriced. Take it as it is. You know, you could play really overweight on him or just try to fade him and pray, but it just is how it is. That's why I don't really like this week a whole lot. And that guy 100 below him is the two-time champion here. Won last year, won in 2014, and overall just has a pretty good course history outside of a couple of sprinkled missed cuts and a withdraw. That'd be Bubba Watson. Now, I think his ownership is going to be slightly mitigated with his nasty miscut at the Waste Management, and people think, oh man, he had great course history there too. In fact, he had phenomenal course history there. And he ruined everyone's lineup as the chalk with the miscut, so maybe people be very hesitant with him, but I still expect him to be very popular. Sticks out as yet another mispricing, 8,300 for him. Although, at least this one, there's a reason for this one with, you know, the miscut and all, but it just doesn't feel right seeing Rose and Watson both underneath, you know, Paul Casey. I mean, Paul Casey's good, but it's kind of ridiculous, man. So, I probably want to use a lot of him, hoping that the miscut drives people off of him, and people are going to need to spend up, so really anyone Bubba and above is going to be highly owned just because there isn't a lot of place to spend your salary unless you go with like a Spieth or a Matsuyama, which I'm sure people will, but yeah, underneath Watson, I don't think anyone's going to own Byung-Hung An. Maybe they should. I mean, finished 6th at the Waste Management, 49th at the Farmers. No course history here, being a Euro guy and all, but the odds drop off at $100 lower than Bubba Watson is crazy. 58-1 compared to Bubba's 34 and Rose's 26. So significant drop off in odds, but you know, it probably makes for a good contrarian play. Statistically, he's looking all right outside of just a really, really bad scrambling game. So maybe that's, you know, a reason to stay away from him. He's really just been a driver putter. But other than that, not really much reason to play him unless you're just going that ownership angle and really need somewhere to spend without it being too chalky. But I don't think there's really much need to risk playing someone like that. But hey, maybe you could, you know, win the tournament and, you know, be that pivot guy for you off of Watson. But I don't really see that happening. You know, probably no reason to fade Rose for him. But anyway, going down, Charles Schwartzel. We haven't seen him in the States in a while, but he's been playing overseas. People will probably not be on him just because they will see in the game logs at a European tournament that he was like the chalk at pretty much a couple of weeks ago. He missed the cut, and that screwed over a lot of people. Although a lot of the chalk missed the cut that week. You know, 8,100 for Schwartzel, that's probably the right price. And being at the right price at this kind of tournament is probably a really bad thing, just because everyone's so egregiously underpriced. But I like him. His course history is really good here. 2 top fives out of 4 straight miscuts in the last 4 years. And when I think par 4 scoring, over the last few years, one of the guys that's really stuck out in par 4 scoring is Charles Schwartzel. He's not going to, we don't have any numbers for him because he hasn't played in America yet this year, but over the last few years, he's been one of the better short par 4 scores, especially in the 400 to 450 yard range, so I think that's going to be a really sneaky angle to attack with him. Just, you know, another putting concern there, but again, not too worried about putting this week. I think Schwartzel's going to be a great play just because the strength of his game is in his irons, and this is an irons course. Going down to Bill Haas, he's won here in 2012, followed with a third-place finish in 2013, but he's missed the cut the last 2 years here. He has been in pretty good form, three straight top 20 finishes, the Career Builder Sony and RSM Classic, so I think he'll be fairly popular. I just like him more in weaker fields. He doesn't really seem to do a whole lot in these pretty strong fields, but he probably makes for a good cash game play, although I wouldn't really do it myself with the missed cuts, but I feel like he'll probably be a popular option in cash games. Actually, at the same price, an even more popular option, I think, would be Matt Kuchar. He has missed two of his last three cuts, although he finished top 10 at the Waste Management. Finished 8th here last year, has a pretty solid course history outside of a missed cut in 2014, but you know, when you think cash games, you think Kuchar. He's a good course manager, obviously accurate, can putt and all that. Just, you know, maybe I think the missed cuts actually will drive a few people off of him, so I think he's a safer pick than he looks on paper. But I think a few of the guys priced underneath him will be a little more popular. Phil Mickelson, 7,900. What? This is like Justin Rose level. He was super popular last week and actually fizzled out a lot after he made the cut. Ended up finishing 67th or 65th, but he had been in great form until then. And although he hasn't played this course in 4 years, he's a former winner, finished T2 in 2012, and has made the cut pretty much every year in the last decade, so I like him a lot. You know, good odds to pricing compared to everyone else around him. Just, I don't like where his driving game is at right now, you know? Not doing a whole lot with it, honestly, but you know he's got magic with his scrambling. I say that about him every time, so that's the main thing to describe him with. Just you know, seeing some concern with that, I think that's what caused him to really mess up last week. So I'm seeing a pretty big change as far as the driving numbers go, so kind of worried, but not, you know, too worried. Just, you know, don't like his greens and regulation percentages. They have not been good, but like I said, he really relies on scrambling a lot, and oh. I just don't think that's like the most important thing here. Although the greens are a little bit smaller, but people see Phil, 7,900, they'll make him the chalk for sure. Hasn't really missed a cut, just, you know, squeaked by the cut last week. So he's gonna be popular. He's got the course history. I just think I'll look in other directions around this price range. Another guy that was popular last week, Shane Lowry. He was popular just because of his ridiculous pricing, but now he's properly priced at 7,900, same as Phil. He's in great form right now, with the three straight made cuts, two straight top 16 finishes, but if you look at odds to pricing, his are nowhere near, you know, any of the guys above him, 76-1. Never played the course before, finally adequately priced. I will go 100 below. Actually move on to Francisco Molinari, who is in awesome form. If you count the European Tour tournaments, I think he's finished top 15 in like 7 or 8 straight tournaments he's been in. Recently T14 and T12 at the Farmers Open and the Career Builder. So, you know, looking pretty good. He's played the course here 3 times in the last 3 years. Made 2 of the cuts, and the best finish was 40th, so not a whole lot of course history upside here. But he's been super accurate. I really like where his game is at right now. He's been destroying the par fours. He's actually top, I think he's ranked 7th on the efficiency scoring as far as the key range of par four goes. So I really like that here. Like seeing that. I think he's going to be sneaky. Not a lot of people own him. And he could definitely make for almost a core play for me. Definitely a strong, strong pivot. Underneath him, 7,600 now, Brant Snedeker, one of the more obvious mispricings here, after a fourth place finish last week too, so this is just crazy. You know, two straight top 10 finishes, you know, one of the better players in the world, top 25 ranked guy, 7,600. What? It just doesn't make any sense at all. I don't understand this. Just one of those egregious mispricing. Same prices, you know, Mark Leishman is also kind of underpriced here with the four straight top 25 finishes for him and a T5 last year. And, well, I'll do a whole segment on this guy later, but just going back to Snedeker and Leishman here, I think Snedeker is going to be super chalky, like incredibly chalky, probably like 30 to 40% owned. So I think I'll avoid him, honestly. The stats don't look great. Like, off the tee, he doesn't do anything, although he can putt. You know, he has the scrambling game and all that. But I just don't think he... I don't know. I just don't see the upside in playing such a chalky guy. I think the fade is the move to make there. At least just go underweight to the field on him. Leishman I do like. But now we're going to get into one of the chalkiest plays on the board and someone I have a very strong take with here. And that guy would be Chucky Three Sticks, Charles Howell III, the king of DFS, and someone that DraftKings just refuses to price properly. Last we saw him, we were going all in on him and cashing out big time with a T2 finish at the Farmers Open. Six straight top 15 finishes, insanely high owned. I'm fading him. And I mean, not a complete fade, obviously, but I'm going to use very, very few shares of him. I think this is one of the strongest fades I've felt out in quite a while. If you look at his course history here, it is absolute fucking trash. Four missed cuts in the last 9 years, and he's made four cuts, but his best finish was T59 in 2009. He does not do well here at all. You know, he's someone who just likes to make money, makes the cut, and then just craps out if he does make the cut. I think this is a giant trap. I think people are going to be leaping into this trap. They're going to look at the game log and go, holy shit, what a mispricing. And, well, it is quite a mispricing, but I just don't like him here. I think his odds of missing the cut are great. And, you know, if history holds up here, like it does with KJ Choi, hopefully, I think I could be sitting on a few really, really strong fades / plays just based on course history alone. And if not, we'll learn something about course history for sure. But I think, you know, this actually does make for another decent case study, just like KJ Choi, you know, fantastic form meeting terrible course history. And I just think with the 30%+ ownership we're going to see on Charles Howell here, I think that is absolutely worth a fade. I feel pretty strongly about that, and I'm usually someone to be all over Chucky Three Sticks, or should I say Chalky Three Sticks. Going down to Keegan Bradley, missed the cut last year, but before that posted four straight top 20 finishes, then a missed cut in 2011. You know, so pretty good course history here for sure. And we've seen a really similar circumstance with his recent form. A few missed cuts at the Waste Management and the Sony. But he's had some awesome finishes, like a T4 at the Farmers, top 25 career builder, and two top 15s at the OHL Classic and the Shriners. And even before then, he was on a super long made cut streak. Kind of surprising for him, but... Yeah, I think people see miscut here last year, miscut his last event, and, you know, pull back on him, but I think he could be a really sneaky, awesome play. Statistically, he's great at everything except for putting. So I think statistically, he's exactly what I'm looking for here. So oddly enough, someone I generally avoid, Keegan Bradley, will be on my team. Going into Martin Laird, 7,500, finished 11th here last year. MDF'd again. I don't know if he actually MDF'd, but he's, you know, he's put down as an MDF here for missing the cut last week. I think that MDF is because he finished like in the I think it's because he finished in between 60th and 70th. I think that's the case, where usually the top 70 in ties make the cut, and he would have made the cut if it was a normal week, but it was the top 60 in ties that went on. So, you know, crappy week for Laird, his second MDF in 3 weeks, but Outside of that, he has 7th at the Waste Management, 9th at the Career Builder, 13th at the OHL. He's been doing pretty well. And, you know, look at his course history. Obviously, the T11 last year, but before then, 3 crappy finishes in a row. I don't know. I don't really have any strong feelings about him. I think people will be attracted a little bit lower because we're starting to get in some of these, like, really, really crazy plays. Just with the pricing being so ridiculously off. I'll get into it here in a bit. I do like Ryan Moore, 7,300. That's an underpricing for sure. 5 top 27 finishes in the last 6 years. Did miss the cut in 2014, but still, that's some solid course history. He's been on a streak of pretty awesome form. The Waste Management didn't do the best, but before then, he had been killing it through the swing season and the FedEx Cup playoff. So long-term form, really good for him. You know, accurate course manager kind of guy. I like him. Brendan Grace at 7,300. I like him too. Hasn't really been around much. He played the Sony Open, finished T13, which is pretty good. He's a world 17th ranked golfer at 7,300. I just think that's a little bit ridiculous. But speaking of ridiculous, we're about to hit the $7,100 range, and that is just so ridiculous. So many guys are priced so ridiculously. I don't understand this at all. J.B. Holmes, course horse here, 7,100. In solid form, although he looked really bad the first round of both the Waste Management and the Pebble Beach, but ended up finishing top 25 in both of those. Awesome course history here, like I said. 5 top 12 finishes in the last 9 years. Only one missed cut in that streak. One of the longest bombers. You know, kind of playing with Bubba, if you're thinking, going the driving distance angle. Destroys the par 5s. Scores a lot of birdies. A lot of bogeys, too, but still a lot of birdies. You know, I like the play a lot. 7,100, just I think a lot of other people like him, too. Maybe it would have been better if he did miss the cut last week. I don't know. But he will have a bit of his ownership stolen by. And this is a crazy one. Brooks Koepka, 7,100. Wow. We're used to seeing him at like the upper 8, lower $9,000 range. 7,100? He's going to be chalky. He's going to be 30% plus chalky for sure. Never played here, but, you know, world's 20th ranked golfer, 7,100. His game log doesn't look the best. A missed cut at the Farmers, only 42nd at the Waste Management, but he did finish 2nd at Shriners back in November. And, you know, he's just an awesome, awesome birdie scorer. One of the better golfers at birdie or better percentage on the entire slate. I think it would be a mistake if people didn't use him a lot. And out of the chalky guys, I think he's going to be one of my mainstays. You can really make a team with 6 studs on it easily. And if you're not trying to be contrarian and really just want to make one of those like 6 stud teams, he's going to be your guy on there. He's a stud, priced like a punt. It's ridiculous. Also, Brendan Steele, 7,100. He's been playing as well as anyone else. And, you know, 4 straight made cuts during the swing season and the early beginning of this season. 16th at the Waste Management, 20th at the Farmers, 6th at the Career Builder. Just doing solid, always plays well in the winter and spring. Made the cut here 5 straight years. T14 in 2015, T10 2014. Solid, solid cash play. Another really chalky play. And I think that Holmes, Koepka, and Steele will kind of steal some of the chalkiness from each other, because they're so chalky and all the same price. But Steele was one of the highest owned players last week of any player. He was over like 30 to 35% owned in every tournament. So that's going to continue on this week for sure. Or not last week, it was 2 weeks ago. He was like the highest owned guy, but still. Maybe someone that'll actually go overlooked, although maybe he should be overlooked a little bit, is Kevin Na. People love Kevin Na, and he did finish T3 here back in 2011, T10 in 2010, but since then, course history's been shit, like Charles Howell III shit. 3 missed cuts, a 61st in 2015, a 76th in 2012. Eek. He did do well at the Waste Management last time we saw him, and really, you think of par 4 scoring, you really do think of Kevin Na. You know, he's great with his irons. That's his game. Awesome approach game, so. This might be one of the times I fade the course history angle, because, you know, I just think the opportunity is there, unlike Charles Howell III. Maybe people will kind of look at the course history and get a little bit off of him, and just with Steele, Koepka, and Holmes right there, I don't think a lot of people are going to be taking Kevin Na. I wish the course history is a little better, but I'll bite my tongue and, you know, go in with him, just because of the opportunity I see here. Although I don't like the fact that his odds are over 100-1 now. That's not too great. Pat Perez, we saw him, you know, withdraw at the Waste Management and have all those injury concerns going into Pebble Beach. No one picked him, and he almost had a top 10 finish. Finished T14. And obviously had been on that crazy streak, you know, finishing fourth at the Farmers, first at the OHL, you know, seventh at the Shriners. So he's someone to strongly consider again. I like the play a lot. The course history is kind of up and down, but you can kind of deal with that. His approach game is not really there, so I wish it was a little bit better. But he has been putting very well, scrambling very well, so good short game. Kind of makes me feel like, you know, a bit more of a cash play, although I really don't think he's safe for a cash game play, so it's kind of, you know, in a weird spot for me. Don't like the statistical fit, don't like the course history, but I do like where he's priced with all those other guys, and I do like his form, so, you know, be that as it may. Webb Simpson, same price, missed the cut here his last time out, missed the cut his last time out on tour after a T2 at the Waste Management, so, or not T2, but he lost in the playoff to Hideki. And before that, he was on a streak of made cuts, so I don't really know what to make of Webb Simpson. He took a price dive for sure, and his approach game is freaking awesome. That's like the main part of his game, so I think based on that, I'll go back to him. Although I'm kind of concerned because, you know, last tournament he was in was another, you know, approach tournament. Really, last week we were kind of looking for the same thing at Pebble. But this is kind of different, you know. This is a flatter course. It doesn't have those crazy, like, up and down kind of shots, you know. But, you know, with Webb Simpson, there's just been a few of these miscuts he's had where they were at courses he had great course history at, and he's just been missing the cut. But he's been doing well at courses that he doesn't have good course history at. So I don't really know what to make of that. I'm not really going to think about it too much. I'm just going to play him. You know, he looks pretty good outside of driving. Just his iron game's there. You know, I think I'm going to roll with him just based on that. We have the return of Harmon. I love me some Harmon. Awesome form. You know, top 24, or T24 at the Waste Management. Two top 10s the 2 weeks before that, and the 20th at Sony. So awesome start to the 2017 season. Not sure if he'll be chalky. Maybe people looking at the game log will go, wow, this guy's been great his last few times out, but he's never really someone that's highly owned. He did finish T3 in 2014, but crap since then. You know, missed cut in 2015, 72nd, so made the cut and just crapped out in 2016, but I'll go back to him for sure. He's putting like crazy. Not really the statistical, you know, match that we're really looking for here, but I like his game outside of just, you know, exactly what I'm looking for at the course, but I just like how he's a streaky golfer, and when he's on a cold streak, he's on a cold streak, but when he's on a hot streak, he generally stays on a hot streak, so I'll probably roll with him again. I think Billy Horschel is severely underpriced, you know, 6,900, and it's not even someone you're really going to think too much about, like, I mean, sure, he won the FedEx Cup before, but he's still not, like, the sexy household name, like, a guy like J.B. Holmes, you know, that would just stick out down here. So I don't expect him to even be that popular, but I really like his game. I think it matches what we're looking for in the course for sure, the whole greens and regulation and all that, you know. So he did have the second-place finish at the RSM not too long ago. He's been making cuts, not doing a whole lot with them, but making cuts, so I like him for sure. Is definitely one of the GPP darts that I'm targeting down here. Last week, we saw Kelly Kraft come out of nowhere, although maybe we could have seen him coming. He had three top 30 finishes and four starts before last week, so maybe it's time to realize he's a thing, although I'm sure the word's out. His approach to the green game, with a decent sample size, is absolutely phenomenal. Way better than almost anyone on the board, so you know, that looks like a stat that would be like a low sample size stat, but it's got eight tournaments of data in there, so definitely someone I'm going to strongly consider. 6,900, still maybe not the sexiest name, although the word's probably out a little bit with that finish last week, only losing to Jordan Spieth. So someone to consider strongly. Harris English is going to be popular at 6,800. Tony Finau, also probably popular at 6,800. Now, English has the course history here. Four straight made cuts, top 10, 2014. Finau, not so much. Missed the cut last year. Didn't do too well in this made cut in 2015. But, you know, they both got... Finau's got some decent, you know, recent form. A couple of missed cuts, but, you know, T4 at the Farmers, T20 at the Sony. But Harris English, he was on a crappy, you know, three straight miscut streak after a fourth place finish at the Shriners. We kind of turned it around, the Farmers, the T14, just okay at the Waste Management. So I think they'll probably be around the same in ownership and stuff. Finau and English had been a little bit popular, but there are just so many value plays down here that, you know, they're going to be a bit overlooked. Most notably, probably one of the chalkiest plays on the board. And you usually don't say that about a 6,700 guy, but they dropped the ball on Jim Furyk for the second straight week in a row. He MDF'd last week, and, you know, it was a bit disappointing, but he did finish 6th at the RSM. The main thing here is that the dude is a course horse. Makes the cut here every single year. Didn't play last year, but before that, yeah, T14, 23rd, 13th, 11th, you know, looks like that all the way back, you know, all top 30, top 40 finishes. You know, he hits the ball like 12 yards, but super accurate, pretty good approach game. He's going to be super chalky, and I really wouldn't blame the field for that at all. In fact, I'm probably following them. I don't care if he's like 40% owned. I'm rolling with Furyk, you know. I love me some course history, probably a little too much, but, you know, this is just a mispricing that's so bad that you're kind of forced to play him. Like, this is like a $3,000 running back in football. Like, that's how bad this is. Jim fucking Furyk, 6,700. Just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Kevin Chappell looked amazing last week until Sunday. He's 6,700 too, and maybe he's a pivot. Just up and down course history here. 26th missed cut, 23rd missed cut, 24th. If you believe in patterns, not the best year to play him. But I am a little bit worried with his statistics. They don't look the best, honestly, but he does hit a lot of birdies. Now, I think a sharp, sharp pivot at 6,700, Thomas Peters. Now, if you ever play European Tour DFS, you'll see Thomas Peters at like $9,000 to $10,000, even $11,000. He's really awesome. He won the Made in Denmark tournament a few months back, but he's one of the, you know, long bombers of the European Tour. Top 50 ranked golfer, up and coming, you know, young player. Looking really promising coming out of the European Tour. Just the only worry is that with these European Tour guys, you know, you oftentimes see them come to the States and just not play that well, despite how well they may be playing overseas. Sure, a lot of it is because, you know, it's a weaker tour for sure, but a lot of it is just their game gets shaken playing at a course they're not familiar with and stuff like that. But he was playing the majors and doing pretty well last year, so I don't know. I like him a lot just as a sneaky, sneaky pivot, or hell, I'll play him with Furyk. Screw it. Another player I think should be popular, very, very popular, in fact, Adam Hadwin. You know, if it wasn't for Furyk being right there, he'd probably be the primo punt. He's finished 16th last year, 22nd the year before that, so great course history, although a little bit short, but still good course history. Just absolutely phenomenal form. Six straight made cuts with a 12th at the Waste Management, the second at the Career Builder with that, you know, 59. This is pretty crazy. And the T10 at the OHL Classic, so solid, solid cash play. You know, putts the ball like crazy. Just kind of adequate at everything else, maybe a little bit above average. Just doesn't hit the most birdies, so maybe lock him in cash and kind of fade him in GPP. Probably a good strategy to go right there. Hudson Swafford, you know, trying to redeem himself after the missed cut, after the win at the Career Builder. Problem is he's played here three times in the last 3 years, missed the cut every time. And this was actually, I think, his last missed cut before he went on that crazy, like, 18 or 19 tournament, you know, straight without missing a cut. So, you know, someone that doesn't like this course, obviously, but, you know, 6,600, worth pulling the trigger on a few times. You know, destroys the par fives, drives the ball miles, stuff like that. James Hahn won here in 2015, just kind of out of nowhere. No one's going to play James Hahn. You can put him in, like, one lineup, maybe, just because this is kind of what he does. He either misses the cut or he just, like, wins the whole thing. Scott Piercy, he's 6,500. Really crazy mispricing for him. He's 6-for-6 and made cuts in the last few months, so his price is crazy last week, and it's super crazy this week still. I don't know what's up with that. So he should be, you know, if you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, which you really don't need to this week, but if you are, you know, trying to jam in like Matsuyama and Spieth, he's definitely the way to go there. And rounding out the bottom tier plays, along with KJ Choi, you've got Luke List. Now, sure, he's missed his last two cuts, but before that, remember, 41st at the Career Builder, which is all right, but five top 15 finishes in a row before that. You know, maybe he just had a little bit of a fluky hot streak where he was just feeling it, and now it's dead, but, you know, at rock bottom price, that's just crazy, you know? Finished second at the Sanderson Farms Tournament, 7th at the OHL Classic, even 13th at the Sony. You know, that's someone I'll play in a few for sure. Last year he finished 20th in his first, you know, time playing this event, so, you know, I like him a lot. Destroys par 5, super long driver, pretty similar to Swafford, except a lot better at scrambling. So, someone I'm going to jam in there a lot if I'm making these, like, super studs and scrubs lineup. So, that'll about do it. And would you look at that? I actually did the full podcast, so I guess I just can't contain myself from talking about these guys, even on a week when I'm pissed off about the soft pricing. To go over, you know, roster construction with you guys, let's just take a look at a sample lineup here, say. Let's take four of the chalkiest guys, put them together. Furyk, Rose, Mickelson, Snedeker. You know those guys are going to be crazy owned. Leaves us with $8,700 left for each player. Plug in, say, Koepka. Alright, Koepka. That'll leave you a 12-3. Almost enough for Spieth. And, you know, if you go, say, Adam Scott, who I figure is going to be very popular, leaves you about $9,000. You'll notice that a lot of lineups are going to leave you with, like, this, like, sort of island of players that are really spaced out up here to choose from. So, maybe some added ownership to guys like Sergio Garcia, Patrick Reed, Paul Casey, Bubba Watson. You know, guys in this kind of dead range, I think they're going to be a little more popular and expected. So, maybe fade up a little Reed, a little Casey, a little Walker. Well, definitely fade Walker. He's garbage right now. But, you know, consider the fact that maybe this is a week to leave a bit of salary off just to get a different kind of roster construction people aren't really thinking about. And really go after a lot of these pivots. Pivoting is going to be very important this week for sure. I think, you know, attacking your guys like, say, Peters or a Chapel instead of a Furyk. Something similar to that. Maybe like going like a Kevin Nossa, JB Holmes. I think that's going to be important for differentiating yourself in GPP for sure. Just try to think outside the box. Don't just sit there and make super chalky lineups because everyone else is going to own them. Try to think of a different way to go about it this week in tournaments. In cash games, I would not recommend playing cash games this week, honestly, because everyone's going to be able to make a superstar lineup. It's just pure gambling if you make a cash game this week, because just so many easy locks. People aren't going to make mistakes. It's going to be stupid. So, you know, tournament only, lower whatever you put in. Just maybe protest with your dollar a little bit until DraftKings decides to tighten up, but I don't really see it happening until after major season. That's when the real fun begins, so... that'll do it. Wish you guys the best in your lineups this week. And, yeah, you know what? Really hope Charles Howell III doesn't hit. Shoot. If you guys are with me, Godspeed. But what's the opposite of all aboard the train? All off the train. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. I'm going to get screwed when we finish top five. Oh, well. I'll see you guys later. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.